It would be very incomplete if I didn't stop by one of the fightingest United States congressmen I've ever met, Congressman John Rarick from the 6th District of the state of Louisiana. I hope you don't mind that introduction, Congressman, because you are battling, and it's going to be a rough battle for several reasons. The congressman, if he wants to, he is at liberty to tell you some of the things he's battling in Washington. So let's have at it, lad. You just, there are no holes barred, and we welcome you once again to the Bible Institute of the Air Network.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Burpo. It's always good to see you in here. Since the last time I had the pleasure of chatting with you, I've been to Arizona. You may recall I spoke both in Phoenix and in Tucson, despite the fact that I found out I was with the Asian flu. But in addition to being a congressman of the 6th District of Louisiana, I also have another title, I understand. My liberal friends on the Democratic Study Group elected me as the non-voting resident commissioner of over 10 million Americans nationwide who seemed in their heart to feel that George Wallace of Alabama was the best choice for president. Mm-hmm. That, of course, is when they stripped me of my seniority.
Your own party.
Well, there's a question in that. Of course, each state has its own party, and of course, I'm a Louisiana Democrat. Mm-hmm. This was a minority of the members, of course, of the various Democratic congressmen from the 50 states. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't my own party. It was a rebellious group of young Turks who are trying very hard to take over the party, and of course take over all the parties, to deny to any American, whether he be an elected official or not, the right of freedom of choice, and the freedom that's necessary to speak out on the issues of the time and to adequately represent his constituents or his people at home.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's come to a pretty sorry state of affairs when a man can't vote his choice.
The ridiculous thing is, of course, we all remember Earl Warren's extremist mutterings, one man, one vote, and we must reshuffle our states, and that we have to guarantee voting rights, and all of these mechanics that appeal maybe to our liberal people, because we're very open-minded today. And yet they would turn around in a party power caucus and do what that they could not do under the Constitution or legally. So there's no constitutional basis for their action. There's no legality in it. In fact, it was even prohibited under the rules of the caucus itself, and yet votes count. And in this instance, this is one of the results of the educational breakdown or buildup of the idea of democracy. Mm-hmm. It talks big, but when you do exercise democracy, then you get pistol-whipped or horse-whipped or really believing in control of your people.
I want to ask you some questions now about three things. There's a sexual revolution, as you well know, in this country. Some National Council of Churches ministers met recently in Iowa, and one of their spokesmen said he saw nothing wrong with premarital sex among young people. Seek Us Now, which I think is a communist-inspired organization, is seeking to bring raw sex down to age 5 and 6 in our schools. You have some pretty strong opinions about that, so let's have them.
Well, of course, what we're witnessing, Doctor, is a cultural revolution or a cultural genocide. People who question that there's any communist involvement are unable to explain why, then, that the communists are the ones who have been working to destroy patriotism, to destroy parental rights, to destroy home rule, to destroy freedom of education. And suddenly, of course, all of this looms up It's like the sex education program. It was almost nationwide, as if suddenly someone pushed a button. And those of us who have been aware of communism through the years and the infiltration into our institutions have known of these activities, but they were so repulsive. And we didn't feel that the communists would make any headway. And so, of course, their best approach was to hit it all at one time and then to turn around and claim academic freedom. And, of course, they didn't say that about praying in the school, and they don't say that about teaching American history in school or the true meaning of the Constitution. But suddenly they come out and they say that if you're against sexual education, which is really perversion, it's the art of sex in itself, it's the animal act, then you're against education and against academic freedom. They at no time have made any suggestion that the way for this to be handled is through the home, or that we educate the parents, you see, because they do not believe in the home. They're really opposed to any parental control, because it would deny them some control over the minds and the bodies of these small American children. Now, I think the other amazing thing is that we've just received word that the Head Start program, which was devised under the communist theory of environmental factors, that genocide or genetics have nothing to do with children or their mentality. The Head Start program, which was for five and above, is now to be abolished because their experience or the actual testing shows that all the Head Start money has been wasted. It's accomplished nothing.
Really?
That the children who were not in these Head Start schools or in these kindergarten facilities came into school and were able to compete, and they were just as mentally alert, and their IQ was the same as the other youngsters. In other words, the IQ, the basic common sense or know-how or incentives, are born in us. So now, in desperation, the environmentalists, and of course this goes clear back to basic communism, because to believe in heredity, you have to believe that people are different. And you have to believe in different racial strains, and you have to believe in selective breeding of the people, like you do hybrid cattle or dogs or anything else. So they have gone now to the point, they say, that we have to abandon at age five because these youngsters are too old. So they want to go to infants and to children before they are even born, and up to the age of three. And we probably will be alarmed at first to read they're even planning now on talking about destroying mentally retarded children. That this hurts their statistics, that they're talking about special medicines. They've got all kinds of excuses as to why the brains of unborn babies are not developing so that all children are born equal. And I have to chuckle when I think about this, because you remember the last time we saw a man who felt that environment would change the heredity of all of his people was Adolf Hitler. And people immediately hollered that Hitler's children was immoral, ungodly, against nature, and he was supposedly scorned by the world community opinion. Yet here we're doing the same thing, and the idea is that the environmentalists refuse to listen to history. Now, we had this Russian, Lysenko. Lysenko, of course, the Russians do not believe in God, so they must believe that all human beings are equal. They're matter. And this is a basic concept. This is the Russian versus the God-given inequality of man. But Lysenko was able to prevail on the Russians that everything was environmental, and the geneticians are the people who may not even believe in God, but they did know that there was within each of us some divine purpose, that God didn't make us like 12 bolts in a box. These geneticists were placed in the Russian concentration camp. Well, the first big test of Lysenko came back in the early 20s when the Russians were all starving to death. They didn't have enough wheat. Now, they had the ordinary wheat, which could be planted, of course, in the late fall or in the early spring, but they didn't have the winter wheat. They didn't have a wheat that would last over the hard Russian winter. So Lysenko said, well, this is ridiculous. He said, wheat is wheat, and all we have to do is to educate and train this wheat to accept the environment of a hard winter, and there we will have enough wheat to feed our people. So the folks, the Russian farmers and the party members, dared not speak out against Lysenko, because if they did, then they were admitting that the theory of environment is all wrong, or is wrong, and that geneticism does play in the role even of a grain of wheat. Mm-hmm. So here were all these Russians planting their ordinary wheat, and of course the wheat would winter kill, it wouldn't grow, and no one dared speak out and say, well, the reason they couldn't produce wheat in Russia was because ordinary wheat could not be made winter wheat, even though the presidium or the head of the Communist Party, and even though all of the Communist Party members and Lysenko, the scientists, ordered that wheat to become winter wheat. In other words, we have the idea here that little grains of wheat, because of the differences within the kernel, are so endowed with differences by God that they can't even be changed by environment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we go back to the sex education. Here in Washington, D.C. alone, one of the Negro militants, a woman, has come out and she says that this sex education is a necessity because it's the only solution to the race problem, because this is the only way that we can teach the young children to not discriminate in their sex activities, so that, of course, they will inbreed with different races. Going back to the same theory again, that by changing the environment, by changing the education and lack events, we will end up with the one international brown man, and intelligence and, of course, intellect, heredity, are given no acknowledgement. In fact, today, anyone who even dares suggest the difference between two kernels of wheat, I guess would be made out to be a lunatic or some kind of a radical. Mm-hmm. We have many other instances in this. Dr. Jansen, the sociologist from the University of Berkeley in California, a man who is an integrationist. Certainly he has collaborated with other integrationists and pro-civil rights to write books trying to prove the point of environmental study on Head Start operation, on model cities. Many of these federal funds, of course, funding jobs, which result in a profit. People are making a profit off of race, and they're going to make a profit off sex education, too, you see. But he has now come out in his report, which is contained in the winter edition of the Harvard Educational Journal, and Dr. Jansen, taking the side of the colored people, tries to show them that by the proven experience of integrated education, they are not helping the black people. In fact, they are coming further and further apart. And that, I believe his figures are that 4 out of 5 black people have an intelligence which is above the medium, or 1 out of 5 blacks is able to keep up with the medium of 4 out of the 5 whites. Mm-hmm. And that this black student, or this black intellect, then tries to become white. He alienates himself from the rest of his race, and he becomes like most white people. He has a small family, if any, and he wants to live different, and of course he's able to be accepted in many instances by white people. And the result then is that the sub-average blacks, many of them we see hovering in these areas in the cities that somebody wants to call ghettos, which is a ridiculous term because no one's forcing them there. They go in there by themselves. That these people don't believe in marriage. They are low in intellect, and they are the breeding stock. Many of them illegitimate children. They're fostering all of this hatred, and they feel we owe them something. And what is actually coming about in the United States, because of the failure of these social scientists to recognize the inherent differences in man, the races are becoming further and further apart as far as the mental intellect or the IQ. Mm-hmm. And I'm so amazed that here's a man who's trying to help the black people, and I think almost every national syndicated columnist has attacked him. They've call him a racist. And
you refer to this man at Berkeley?
This man, Dr. Jansen.
Oh, yeah.
And in other words, what the whole thing is we've gone so far from the truth that they're like Lysenko. If you try to speak the truth, you're put in a prison camp. And incidentally, the geneticists from Soviet Russia that Lysenko and his environmentalists were so afraid of trying to tell the people that there was a difference, died in a Russian prison camp.
Really?
It's quite a story. I mean, amazing. When you come to this sex education, we can but be reminded of the accuracy or the forecast of various early socialists from the communist countries, Russia. What's his name? Pavlov's experiments, where he laid this down. He said we must be able to infiltrate with a fifth column in the United States, prevail upon the Christian forgiveness, the brotherhood attitude of the American people, and by getting them to be permissive and tolerant and the great-hearted people that most Americans are, we will be able to infiltrate into their courts and into their laws and into various matter, so that we will in the end be able to gain, through the use of drugs, sex education, perversion, and moral breakdown, one generation. There'll be a one generation gap. And we hear this, some of our educators talk about a generation gap.
Yeah. Yeah.
They refuse to say that, of course, they made the gap. They're the ones that have torn the children away from the parents and turned them on society, turned them against the parents, turned them against fundamental Christian concepts and beliefs, and turned them actually against the heritage, which is that of the American people that we owe to pass on to our children. And then here we sit. Here sits Pavlov, the political the social politician. He says, "Give us one generation, and the American people will never again be able to capture us."
I just did a program with him.
Well, it's quite interesting. Of course, I tell many of these young children that come to me, and they've got all kinds of wild ideas. I said, the amazing thing is, you say you're rebelling against us and you're rebelling against discipline. I said, one thing I can assure you is that when you have children, your children are going to rebel against you. Mm-hmm. And probably the first thing they'll do is they're going to cut their hair and take a bath and put shoes on. And I said, so you haven't got any hold on civilization either. But the only thing that worries me about all of this over-promiscuousness, this libertinism, is that it's going to create a generation gap.
Yeah.
And our youth in America are the strength. They're the future of the American people and the free world.
Mm-hmm.
And really what they are, they're just as much a matter of national defense as our guns, our ABMs, our tanks, or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
We can win a war either politically, intellectually, or by use of force in the military. If we don't have this large reservoir of willing, forward-thinking Americans, I mean, they're going to just tear us apart. There's not going to be anything here to resist or to continue our American tradition.
True. Very good. Now, you and I have discussed the Vietnam War and whether or not this administration is going to change its policy or change the policy of the national government and go in and win. I was reading an article here that you prefaced on the Vietnam War, and I would like for you to discuss this a little bit. Here is a man, what's his name? Mr. Z.A. Rust. He's a foreigner.
Yes, sir. He is a foreign nobility.
I read...
lifelong diplomat.
I read that scripture in my hotel room.
Isn't that amazing? Here's a foreigner who, sitting in a distant country, 500,000 miles away, and this man is able to know more about what's going on in the political scene than many of us who try to be concerned and keep informed in the United States. And I asked this man, I said, "Well, how do you know so much about our policies and our people?" And he said, the communists ran me out of my country better than 25 years ago. And he said, "We have no choice." She said, "What the United States does is our life." He says, "I have no home. I have no one to depend upon." He said, "The only chance that we have, we in the overrun countries, is the chance that the American people will eventually wake up before it's too late."
Uh-huh.
And this is why they keep in so immediate contact with our political statements and our policies and our direction.
Do you think that we're going to pull out of Vietnam, or are we going to open up and follow this Brigadier General of the Marine Corps as advice? Which you think?
Well, of course, what is right and wrong is no longer of any significance in political circles here in Washington. The only policy is devised on what gets votes and how to stay in office. And, of course, looking at it from the president's viewpoint, he's saying, how will I get more votes? He knows he can win the war, but he says, if I go ahead and win the war, they're going to tear me up as saying that I'm some kind of a hawk. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if I can get any credit for bringing peace, even through surrender, then, of course, the various church people and the pacifist-minded people will give me back. And, of course, if I'm going to be reelected, my main thing is to get votes. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we're reminded today that yesterday an airplane with 31 American boys on board, our sons, they're not mercenaries. These are our boys. We force them to go with their defenders. We're shot down off the coast of North Korea. Many of the Republicans had become so... let's say thought control through sensitivity training, that they had indicated that they thought the late President Eisenhower had won the war in North Korea, and suddenly looking back we find there never was any peace treaty and there never was anything but an agreement.
Right.
And here we have a man who is in history as a great peace-giving president, and young men being killed today in a battleground where they were not even born when the battle went on.
Right.
So, of course, with the proper build-up and the play on words and the fear, the fright peddling that can be thrown out, President Nixon can easily see that he can just gradually pull our troops out of South Vietnam. And he can justify his surrender move by just saying, well, I saved your son's life, I brought peace to the Middle East, and then we'll just overlook the bloodbath that will follow. And, of course, it's not even an issue of whether we back the president or whether we are for an immediate, just sudden withdrawal. We must look at the alternatives. And, of course, we always hear the alternatives of Russian involvement, the Red Chinese involvement, should we escalate. Yet the Russians are escalating, and certainly they're looking at alternatives, too. They're figuring, well, how far can we push the Americans?
Yeah.
On the other hand, if we just pull out of the Orient, will we ever go back again? And of course, the answer is no. And if we have surrendered our integrity to all of the free nations in the world, then no one can ever trust us again. I mean, a treaty is no longer but a piece of scrap paper if the American government signs it. If we won't defend in communist aggression in Vietnam, will we defend it in the Philippines? No, we wouldn't defend it there. Would we defend it in Hawaii? Why, of course not. We wouldn't defend it then in California. When it comes to the West Bank of the Mississippi, we won't defend it on the East Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter that somewhere along the line, someone has to come up and tell our leaders that if they really want peace, you don't get it by just a bunch of verbiage of talking that we don't want to win and that we're ashamed of what we're doing. We have to say, if we're going to have peace, we're going to go in and get it. And the only thing you do in this is you don't escalate anything but your policy. The escalation is we suddenly tell our military people, let's come up with a plan to win. We don't even have a military plan to win in South Vietnam. Our military people have been forbidden to come up with a plan for victory. Let's suddenly have our policy people start talking. If Ho Chi Minh isn't at the peace table in earnest in 2 weeks, we're going to go and get him and bring him to the peace table.
Mm-hmm.
And I assure you that if the Russians and the rest of these birds over there know we're going to go out to do whatever we have to do to back up our boys, and we send them to do a job, and they certainly, if they're doing a job for us, they expect us to back them.
Mm-hmm.
We tell them we're going to back them to the hilt, and we're going to go in and get him, and we're going to have peace. But you can only have peace through victory. You can never have any settlement of any kind because there's nothing to induce the communists today to go to the peace table.
Now you can just hear the dove screaming at you and me both. But here,
They're not doves.
The
doves have cost the lives of more boys in South Vietnam than all of the bullets that have been hitting our men.
Well, I'm glad.
A South Vietnam boy can die, one of our Americans can die, just as dead from hate bullets as he can from love bullets.
Sure.
And all they're doing is they are prolonging the war by falsely encouraging the communists to think that maybe we're going to give up and quit. And giving him false encouragement that this is an unpopular war and that people are divided. And if they would shut up all this loudmouth anarchy and get behind the policy of our country, we'd get peace there a lot quicker. We'd have already saved 15,000 boys.
Mm-hmm.
But these peace marchers are the true enemy of the American people because they are responsible. Ministers and teachers and all that march in protest to this. They don't march in protest to the communist aggression. So we know this, that their only objective is to prolong the war and have more and more loss of life until they think that eventually the American people will give up and demand to Mr. Nixon that we bring the boys home.
Mm-hmm. We have less than 2 minutes. I wish this has really gone fast. I wish you had time to go a little further in this. And yesterday we were discussing, not on tape, who really runs this country. I have to leave here Friday night. Suppose we can get together for another half hour and...
I have a speaking engagement Friday night up in New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to spend at least two weekends a month out on the road because, mm-hmm. as you can well see, I get very little publicity. They don't dare permit views such as mine to reach the American people. I don't try to reach conclusions. I only try to get them to think.
Mm-hmm.
And this is taboo. This is censored today.
Sure.
I'm sorry, but I won't be able to be.
I'm sorry, Congressman. We would like for the audience to respond to this broadcast. As you know, this is a tape broadcast in the office of Congressman John Rarick from the state of Louisiana. For your letters and your comments, I want you to write me a letter. Address it to the Bible Institute, Post Office Box 2157, Mesa, which is spelled M-E-S-A, Arizona, zip 85201. In the 20 seconds that I have left, I want you to pray for Congressman Rarick, because, believe me, the bigwigs in Washington and over the country are after this man to destroy him. He's told me some things that I can't tell you over the air, but you pray for him. And God willing, I'll be back tomorrow with another good man from Capitol Hill in Washington.